Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. My name is Bob, and today we have a special show because I am doing an interview with members of the group The Lost Generation. So, as you probably know, they had their excellent record with their hit The Sly, The Slick, and The Wicked, and they have an excellent story and a lot of good songs that we're going to play, so you should keep tuned. So, first of all, can the people who are here introduce themselves?
Fred Simon.
Diana Simon.
And the manager, Gus Redmond.
Okay, well, thanks so much for coming down, first of all. So, what part of Chicago is your group from?
We're from the south side of Chicago, Stateway Gardens originally at 35th and State.
Okay.
We were originally Wentworth Gardens. We moved across the street to the newer projects that they were building. And so we moved into Stateway Gardens, and that's where we originated from.
Okay. So how'd you guys get started? Like, I know your brother Larrell got started a little earlier than you. Is that right?
Yeah, Larrell had a group called the Vondells.
Okay.
It was Love Vondells at first.
Okay.
And then they were a local group around the city. They were with King Kolax, I think his big band.
Yeah, on the Marvello label.
On the Marvello label.
When did they form? Do you know?
Oh no, I was a kid. I was very young when they formed. So I used to see him go to shows. I used to attend some of his shows if they were at the community Stateway Center.
Okay.
And that's what, and me and Jesse Dean, who was also in the group, his younger brother Leslie Dean, and we would attend the shows, and that's what inspired us to try and follow in their footsteps.
I think their like local hit Lenore came out maybe 1964 or something like
that.
Yeah,
around then, yes.
So they probably formed a few years earlier than that, maybe?
Yeah.
Were they in high school when they formed, do you know?
They were in high school, yes.
And how much older is your brother than you?
Wow, he just, matter of fact, his birthday is March 18th, so I think he'll be 65. So I'm 57, so.
Okay.
Do the math.
Okay, so, and how did you get started singing?
Well, I always sang. My brother, Larrell, as he was with his groups, we were like the younger brothers, Leslie Dean, Jesse Dean's younger brother, Charles Jackson, myself, and Russell Hill.
Okay.
We used to have a young group, and Larrell used to nurture us, and we were like the miniature, you know, them. So,
do you remember the name of your group?
Our group was the Previews.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you, and were you in high school when you had that group?
No,
were you younger?
We were in grammar school, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you definitely didn't record anything?
No, we didn't record anything, no.
And so do you remember your brother, like, how was he in high school when the Lenore came out?
Yes, he was in high school.
So was he already doing shows at the time?
Yeah, they were doing shows. My mother was very supportive, and she got the other mothers together, the other members of the group, and they like bought them uniforms and things of that nature, and they went out and they performed at different venues around Chicago.
Okay, and then so what's the story? How did you end up becoming in the Lost Generation, and how did the Lost Generation form?
Well, the original Lost Generation, the name of the group was The Four Kinds of Love, and they had a young lady in the group.
Okay,
her name was. Liz, I forgot her last name, but The Sly, Slick, and the Wicked was originally written for a female lead singer, and they were doing like a Gladys Knight and the Pips type of thing.
Okay.
She was leading, they had the three background singers, but her husband, a very good friend of ours, LaFrance was his name, he got kind of jealous of her being with three other young men, and he pulled her out of the group. She quit.
Okay.
And so when she quit, it was suggested by Jesse Dean to put me in the group, Larrell's younger brother, which Larrell resisted at first. You know, I was his younger brother. He knew I could sing, but still, it's singing with his younger brother. And I had to audition, of course, and the rest is history. They brought me in.
Do you remember what year that was?
69.
Okay, so the Vondells had broken up at that point, or that group had evolved out of the Vondells?
That group evolved out of the Vondells, yes, because Glenn Murdoch, who was one of the original Vondells, went on to, he married a young lady named Joyce Kennedy.
Okay.
Who they formed, Mother's Finest. Yes.
Okay.
And they, originally they were going, it was just Joyce and Glenn, and they were going overseas performing in Thailand and different countries overseas because they had a good booking agent back at the time before Mother's Finest started.
Yes, I think she was with Jade Booking Agency. Okay, so Glenn left to become with Mother's Finest, and then the group became Four Kinds of Love. You brought in a woman to replace
him. Darrell brought in a woman to replace him, and then woman left, and then they brought me in.
Okay, so the Vondells were together for about 5-6 years, something like that.
Well, maybe a little longer, but
okay.
Yeah.
And then you ended up replacing the woman Liz. You said
yes.
Her name was.
Yes.
So and then you ended up actually pretty soon recording the song "The Sly, the Slick, and the Wicked."
Well, Larell was a very prolific songwriter, and he wrote a number of tunes. He had a book of songs.
Okay.
And we rehearsed every day, every night, all day, all night, singing them. And I believe it was Jesse Dean who suggested that we meet with Gus Redman, who's a childhood friend of theirs.
Okay.
From Stateway, because Gus also came from Stateway. He was a promotion man at Brunswick at the time. He was handling major acts, Major Lance, the Shylights, the Artistics, Otis LaVille,
okay.
A number of artists. And Gus brought us to the attention of Carl Davis.
Okay. So let me actually play your record, The Sly, the Slick, and the Wicked, and then we can talk more about the story of how the record was recorded, because we're just getting up to that point.
Great.
So this is The Lost Generation with The Sly, the Slick, and the Wicked.
Wicked, 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 wicked.
Okay, that was just the Lost Generation with their first record, The Sly, The Slick, and The Wicked, one of the all-time great Chicago soul records. And if you are just tuning in, we have members of the Lost Generation talking about their group and telling their story. So right before I played that song, we were talking about how the group was called The Four Kinds of Love.
Yes.
And how Fred Simon replaced the woman in the group, and they became a four-man group.
Yes.
So one thing I didn't ask, so who were the four members of the Lost Generation at the time?
Myself, Larrell Simon, Jesse Dean, and Larry Brownlee, from originally with the CODs.
Okay. How did you know Larry?
From my brother Larrell. Larry used to come around, and he's a guitar player.
Okay.
And him and my brother used to write songs together. And Larry had originally written Michael the Lover for
okay.
the CODs. And he came and he became one of the Lost Generation.
So was he in that group, The Four Kinds of Love, also?
Absolutely.
But he wasn't in the Vondels, right?
No, he wasn't in the Vondels.
Okay. And then how'd you come? So did you change your name right after you replaced Liz? How'd you come up with the name Lost Generation?
There was a promotion man in Chicago named Mel Collins, I believe. And he
was Joe Armstead's
husband, yeah. Yes. And he was, the original name of the Lost Generation was The Generation Gap.
Okay.
And we were kind of toying with that name, and then Mel Collins came up with The Lost Generation, so that kind of stuck with us.
But he didn't have any connection to you otherwise, other than he thought up a name?
That was it, yeah.
Okay. And were you guys already... So you guys formed a group, and you already said that your brother had written a ton of songs.
Yes.
Were you guys already just rehearsing? Were you looking for a record deal?
We were just rehearsing, just singing every day, looking for a record deal. We hadn't done any shows.
And then you met up with Gus, right?
Yes.
So, Gus, you want to give a little bit of background about what you did?
And then I heard The Sly, Slick, and The Wicked.
Okay.
And when I first heard it, when Jesse played it for me, I thought it was... instant. I thought it was a hit record.
So they had actually already recorded the song?
No. Back in the day, there was... No, it wasn't a demo.
It wasn't even a demo. It was just a guitar, right?
Larry Brownlee was playing the guitar, and we would sing the songs a cappella with the guitar.
Yeah.
And they took us in the studio to Brunswick. Gus took us back there with Carl, and there was a bunch of producers and guys sitting around, and we played some of the songs out of the book that we had.
Okay.
And The Sly, Slick, and The Wicked was the one that they recognized and said, oh, we need to go with this right away.
Right.
2 weeks after they heard it, we were in the studio.
Yeah.
So Gus took you to Brunswick, pretty much. Did you sign a contract there?
Yes.
Okay. And Gus, how long had you been working at Brunswick?
I had been working with Bonzo for a pretty good while. I mean, we were having hit records, and we just came back off a tour.
Okay.
A Super Soul Spectacular tour.
And it was through, you had a lot of history working with Carl Davis?
Yeah, I had a lot of history working with Carl Davis. Actually, when I came to Carl Davis, it was myself, Otis LaVelle, and Major Lance came to Carl at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I was singing with Major Lance and Otis LaVelle.
Like in the 50s even?
In the 50s, right.
Okay.
And I had a misfortune with the group, and my wife slapped me in front of everybody, and so I was embarrassed, and stepped away.
What was the name of the group you had with Major?
Major Lance and the Love Tones.
Okay.
And it was two female, and myself, Otis, and Major.
And did you guys ever record?
No, we were just, you know, singing around.
Just a local group?
Yeah. And actually, how I met Major and Otis, my sister Peaches was dating Otis.
Okay.
And we used to go, you know, to the automobile club and the different places like that. And Major Lance and Otis, they came down to Stateway Garden.
Okay.
And I met them, and then that's how we started running together and became friends.
Okay.
And that was way before the Lost Generations. You know, this was back in the 50s and stuff. And then around 69 is when the group came. I saw them then. And by 70 is when our record had hit.
Okay.
And we were charted in Billboard.
So it wasn't hard to get them signed because you were already an A&R guy and you played them.
I wasn't an A&R guy. I was a
promotions guy.
Exactly.
And you got signed. Did you get signed based on the song Sly, Slick, and The Wicked? Like that's what you were going to record?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That was the song.
So when you went and recorded it, obviously the hook in the song that makes it unique is that delay effect.
Yes,
on
the echo, wicked, 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 yes.
So what's the story behind that?
Originally, it was just The Sly, The Slick, and The Wicked. That's all we said. We didn't have an echo or anything. But Eugene Record, who was the producer of the record, when we came back after we recorded one night, we came the next day, and he was mixing it you know, putting all the voices and the music together. And he said, I got a surprise for you guys. Just listen to it. And he put it on and he played it. And when he played it back, it was wicked, wicked, wicked. And that's when we heard it ourselves. And it kind of, like, blowed us away.
And okay. Bruce Adeen now. Bruce Adeen was the singer.
Yeah, Bruce Adeen. He was the engineer at Brunswick at the time. He engineered, I think, Thriller and all Michael Jackson stuff. He went to Motown.
That was after, though, after he left us.
Where was the studio that you recorded at?
1449 South Michigan.
But was it the Brunswick Studios?
Well, we recorded Sly Singing the Wicked at Universal Studios down on Oak Street.
Right.
Okay.
Brunswick was in the process of building a studio. Matter of fact, we like to say that we helped them build their studio because Sly Singing the Wicked came out, became such a big hit. And shortly after that, they built new studios at 1449 South Michigan.
And one thing I wanted to ask is, although it was unique, it was also kind of similar to another Chicago record, the song Tragic by the Shepherds.
Yes, yes.
So was there any connection to that?
Well, maybe Eugene was thinking about that at the time. But,
okay, so you didn't know about any connection?
It was not at all, but it was a great thing as far as we were concerned.
Worked well,
yeah.
So that record became a national hit, right?
Absolutely.
It's an 8-week song.
Okay. Do you remember how high? I mean, I probably should have looked it up before the interview. But do you remember how high it went in the charts?
It went to number one, and we tied next to the Michael Jackson song. That Michael Jackson had a song out
in 70.
Yeah, I believe it was ABC.
ABC was out around so.
We were tied with them on the record world national charts.
We were tied with the Jacksons at that time for the most popular.
That's a nice accomplishment.
Song. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, did you start touring on that song?
Yes, we did. We started touring. Apollo
James
Theater.
Brown, James Brown, big tour.
We toured the Apollo Theater, Philadelphia, the Uptown Theater in Philadelphia, the Fox in Detroit, the Howard in Washington. It was called the Chitlin' Circuit at the time. So if you had a hit record, you made the rounds of those major theaters. The only regret I had was that I didn't play the Regal Theater here in Chicago, the original Regal.
Okay.
I wanted to play there. I used to go there as a kid all the time. But just as our records started getting off the ground, you know, they kind of burnt up. They had a major fire. And they tore it down.
So, and even the flip of the record is really nice, too, that you're so young, but you're so
young. Yeah, that was very popular also. It was like a two-sided hit.
So that got played in Chicago,
too? It got played nationally also, yes.
Okay. And you had a bunch of follow-up 45s on Brunswick.
Yeah.
And you cut a whole album.
Yes.
But one of the follow-up 45s that I wanted to talk about and I wanted to play next is called Talking the Teenage Language.
Yeah, Talking the Teenage Language came a little later.
Okay.
After we had been recording for a while. And
I think it came out before your second album,
though. Yeah. And it was right before we called it Talking the Teenage Language because it was like Man would be Ms. Ann and Gizero would be Girl, that type of thing. And that was way before the Snoop Dogs and all these other people brought out this kind of language.
Pig language. Was that pig language?
No,
it wasn't pig language,
but it was something that Laurel came up with, and I could speak it very well. So on the record, Laurel would be talking the English part while I would translate it into this particular teenage language that we put out at the time.
So was it something that you saw like kids, like
hippie
kids doing, and you kind of emulated it?
Yeah, teenagers were doing it at the time. Matter of fact, I think Larry Brownlee was the first one that really brought it to our attention. And then we used to talk it among ourselves when we didn't want anybody to know what we were talking about. We could be in a room and talking about somebody and they wouldn't know it because we would do this teenage language, you know.
Okay. Yeah, and it's kind of proto-rap. Like, you even call it a rap in the song.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're like, listen to our mumbling rap.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play the song because it's interesting and we could talk some more.
That's what Fred used to be able to speak. Remember Fred used to teach you how to say it, but I couldn't even say it.
Okay, here it is.
Yeah. language. They identify themselves with what they call talking the teenage language. It's their way of talking around the generation gap. Call on Brother Simone, not listen to him rap.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just the Lost Generation with their record Talking the Teenage Language. And if you're just tuning in, we have members of the Lost Generation talking about their story and their records. So you were just describing how the song was about how, like, the kids were talking in kind of a rap style in the street and,
yeah, and this
flipping
was,
around the words.
This was in the early 70s, so way before they started talking, and now we were doing that way back 30 years ago.
So one thing I wanted to ask about is that was kind of unique about your group as a soul group is that you were kind of tuned into, like, first of all, just if you listen to the songs you're talking about, like the current generation, and
yeah,
it's kind of about like the protest generation of the late 60s, early 70s, and you guys were even called the Lost Generation.
Yes.
So that was like a running theme in your material.
Yes, it was.
So, I mean, what was there something about, like, were you just guys into that culture too, or why did you adopt that style?
Well, we didn't really adopt the style. What happened was, what I found very strange about the whole thing is we were on the road after releasing the Side Singing a Wicked single. We were on the road. We had recorded the album, but we didn't know what the album was. We didn't have anything to do with the artwork or anything with the album. And I believe Gus or somebody called us and said, okay, they've released the album. It's in stores. And we were in San Antonio, Texas, and we were downtown San Antonio, so we're looking for the record in the stores. And we go in the store, and we look in the R&B section, and it's not there. But we look in the pop section, and the album is there. But it had a lot of,
like, hippie kind of
a lot of hippie, like white people, colorful.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, wait a minute, this couldn't be our album. So we were overlooking it until we turned the album over, and there was our pictures on the back of the album. So they kind of marketed it by our name and toward a pop audience.
And a rock,
like a Lost Generation type of thing. Yeah.
So did you actually cross over to
kind of like Sly
Stone, sort of like that
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of you talked about originally doing shows on the Chitlin Circuit, which was like the major black theaters that you were talking about.
Yes.
But did you actually perform for white audiences or college audiences?
We performed for college audiences, white audiences, yes.
Do you remember some of the places you did shows?
We did the Boston Sugar Shack in Boston, Columbia, South Carolina. We was there at a university. I don't remember the name of the university. But we played a lot of colleges. Yeah.
Okay. And do you remember, what was there anything, like, how did your shows go? Like, did you have, were you usually on a review with other groups?
Yes. We were on a review. Back then, when we were performing, there would be, you could go and spend $5 and see the Kool and the Gang, the Lost Generation, the Impressions. I mean, like, 10 groups on one bill, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Back then, and you go on and you do your thing, and we'd also perform with other major artists. We won on tour with James Brown for about 4, 5, 6 months, something like that.
In around 1970?
Yeah, around the 70s, early 70s.
Okay.
A Sex Machine, Popcorn, okay. Those days when he had those out. We performed with James Brown all over the country, and Stylistics, and the Shy Lights, and the Delphonics, The Main Ingredient, The Intruders, all the groups back in the day. We all were on the same bill.
So you got really big really fast.
We got really big really fast. That was a hindrance to, you know, sometimes you need to take it a little slow. I think we would have been a little more successful. We got big so fast that we didn't realize, you know, what was going on. We just, our head was in the lights. We were getting the girls, making more money than we've ever made before in our lives. And we didn't look at the business aspect of it.
So, and we had talked about how your brother was older than you. Were you just out of high school?
I was just, not just out of high school. I had been working because I was 19 years old.
Okay.
So I got my GED from the Job Corps, and then I went to work at the post office.
Okay.
With my father. My father worked there. And, well, we all worked there. If you were in my family, you worked at the post office.
Okay.
My father looked at entertainment as, you know, something fleeting. You need a real job. So, you know, you worked at the post office. But then after we got out there and the record hit and he came to a few of our shows, he was very proud, you know, and he was taking movies. And my mother was, and my sister was the fan club. They were doing mailing out stuff. And everybody got involved. Everybody in the family, in the neighborhood, all our friends, everybody.
So do you actually have old video or film of the group performing?
We were looking at it the other night over at my mother's house. We were looking at us performing at the High Chaparral. They were doing a tribute for the Shy Lights. Don Cornelius was there because we started the original Soul Train. The original Soul Train
Channel
started
26.
Here, Channel 26 in Chicago, and we were one of the first groups ever to perform.
Okay. So, yeah, it'd be cool if you ever find any of that footage, I get it transferred for you.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Put it on the internet.
Don Cornelius has it.
Well, the Soul Train, I mean, probably you couldn't because Don keeps a lock on that
stuff.
Yeah, But I'm just saying, if any of your shows or something, it'd be awesome to see stuff like that.
Oh, I would love to see that, myself, yeah.
Okay. So, after The Sly, Slick, and Wicked, I played a later record, but your initial follow-up was it...
Sorry, Wait a Minute.
Wait a Minute?
Yes.
And that had a similar... Didn't you use the delay effect in that one, too?
Yes, that's a similar delay effect, yes.
And then you did Wasting Time.
Yeah, Wasting Time.
And you were telling me there was a story behind that.
Yeah, we were sitting around, and we were rehearsing and waiting for Gus to show up. And waiting for our wives to come pick us up, and we had been sitting at, I think we were at Larry Brownlee's house, and Laurel wrote a song. We're just sitting there talking, Wasting Time.
Okay. And then Talking the Teenage Language came out soon after that.
Yes, yes.
And that got some play in Chicago, was that
right? That was a national play also, yes.
Okay. And then and your first album, it probably, like, album sales is different than radio, obviously. Like, rock people bought albums more than...
Yes.
Like, sort of soul music was a lot more 45-oriented.
Yes.
So then you actually released a second album...
Yes.
After that, but did you have any singles off of the second album?
The second album, we had a single called The Young, Tough, and the Terrible.
And that was the title track of the album, too.
Yes, I think that was one of our better tracks. It was like in a Temptations type of, just my imagination type of mood in that song.
Okay.
Very good song.
But the album, they didn't... they did more. First of all, you did a bunch of covers on the album.
Yeah,
like you covered to Crawl Before You Walk.
Yeah, and, we covered a lot of songs.
But they didn't release any other singles off except that one single. So it seems like they were pushing it more for like the rock type audience again that you were talking about.
Yes.
But one thing I definitely wanted to play, which is just an excellent song that unfortunately was never released as a single, was called "This Is the Lost Generation."
Yes.
And it was from your album. It had a similar theme. To what we were talking about before, about like the sort of younger generation protesting and stuff.
Yeah. Laurel always wrote ahead of his time, and he wrote some very, very timely music. And This Is the Lost Generation was one of our definitely crowning achievements, one of our better records that we've ever recorded.
Yeah, and it definitely kind of transcends soul music as a genre, because like most songs, I mean, with everything I play in the song, they're all love songs or whatever. And this, this is not only is it a soul song, but it kind of was like topical. And
yes,
so so I'm gonna play the record and we can talk some more. So this is The Lost Generation with This Is The Lost Generation. Wait, that's not it. Hold on. This is it. Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. That was just The Lost Generation with a cut off of their second album called This Is The Lost Generation, which is an excellent sort of song about, I guess just about like sort of the sort of protest younger kind of college generation at the time. And we were just talking about how like one thing about your music was that, well, first of all, they didn't really release many singles off the album, and we were talking about how they sort of marketed the albums towards sort of a white rock audience.
Yes.
And you sort of cross over between sort of as an R&B act and as a rock act, and the themes in your material sort of crossed over too.
Yes.
And then you were telling me that you actually dressed like rock musicians.
We didn't dress like an R&B group. We would dress like rock musicians. We wore capes, big hats, jumpsuits, different colors, a lot of flashy psychedelic stuff.
Okay.
Big platform shoes.
And it was like explicitly your goal to cross over to both audiences?
Yes, we want to be universal. We don't want to be pigeonholed as a black, so-called black R&B group. We wanted to appeal to the universally.
And but you actually got played both on white radio and black radio at the time.
Yes, yes.
Because a lot of artists, like a lot of black artists that crossed over didn't get, like I don't think Jimi Hendrix actually got a lot of play on black radio at the time.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't until later that he was sort of embraced. So, yeah, that's interesting that you managed to sort of do both things. But I think at the same time, that kind of meant that Brunswick didn't know how to handle you as
well.
Yeah,
they didn't have a marketing department, no.
Okay.
They had promotion men like Gus, but they didn't have
Melvin Moore,
Melvin,
all these guys. Like
but they didn't have a real marketing department. And if they did marketing, it was geared more toward Jackie Wilson, who was the big act on the label at that time.
The Shy Lights got probably
the Shy Lights. Yeah, the Shy Lights when they went on Flip Wilson, I think. With Old Girl, and then they started like marketing, but that was after us.
And one thing I wanted to ask about, it wasn't there a lineup change in the group at some point?
Yeah, Larry Brownlee, for whatever reason, he kind of dropped out of sight for a minute, so we brought in Jesse Dean's brother, Leslie Dean.
So do you remember around what time that lineup changed, like what songs?
Leslie was involved in the second album. He's singing on the Young, Tough, and the Terrible album.
Okay.
His picture's not on there, but he's singing on there. Matter of fact, it was five of us at the time. We did Young, Tough, and Terrible. Larry came back to the group, and we kept Leslie, so it was five of us when we recorded the Young, Tough, and the Terrible album.
So there's five people singing on the whole album?
On the Young, Tough, and the Terrible album.
And singing on Talk in the Teenage Language, Leslie's not in the group yet?
No.
Okay. But you guys went and toured and stuff. You were four guys all the time?
Yeah, well, we toured with five guys also. Off the second album, we toured, yeah.
Okay.
We did the big stadiums, the Honeycomb group back then. Like I said, we were on the late on shows with a number of R&B acts and pop acts at that time. They would put us on the bill, Joe Tex and stuff like that. So it was five of us then.
Did you ever get on the National Soul Train?
No, we never played the National Soul Train show for whatever reason. I don't know.
Okay.
But we kind of helped Don out when he first started out. And he used to have a showcase on Tuesday nights at this club called Skyway Lounge also.
Okay.
And we used to play that for him. We used to do things for Don. But once he got nationally, for whatever reason, we kind of lost touch.
Okay. And one thing I want to play, if we have time, but I definitely, we have a lot of stuff to talk about, or a lot of records to play, is Brunswick released one last single on you guys in 1973, and both sides were excellent. It was Pretty Little Angel Eyes and You Only Get Out of Love, You Put In.
Pretty Little Angel Eyes was written by Jeffrey Perry, and if anybody's steppers out there listening, he wrote the number one steppers cut, Love's Gonna Last.
Yeah.
And he wrote Pretty Little Angel Eyes for us. And matter of fact, the rhythm track was done with the original Motown musicians. They did a movie about them.
The Funk Brothers.
The Funk Brothers are actually playing the rhythms
song. Absolutely. We used to sneak over to Detroit and produce Barry's band over there, and then come back with Chicago and put the vocals on.
That's interesting.
Because we did Jackie Wilson's song over there, Whisper, and a lot of stuff, but at the time, Barry, nobody knew what this was, the stuff we were doing. It was kind of like underground, you know.
Yeah, I know on a lot of the Brunswick recordings, actually I interviewed Bernard Reed a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So like his band, The Pieces of Peace, played on a lot of the stuff, but then they left to be with Twinite Records and Sal Johnson,
Yeah.
So probably around that time they were already gone.
Well, Bernard played on all our songs on Brunswick.
Okay.
He played bass on all of our songs, yeah.
And so definitely both tracks, Pretty Little Angel Eyes and You Only Gotta Love, they're both like some of my favorite records that you did. They're really good songs. But I guess Brunswick didn't promote those.
Yeah, Pretty Little Angel Eyes, like I said, it's like a dual lead. Laurel and myself, we led that particular song.
And then, so that was the last record you recorded for Brunswick, and that came out around 1973.
Yeah, around there.
And then the group stayed together and recorded for
Innovation
Records, which is one of Carl Davis's labels.
Yeah.
It was distributed by Warner Brothers, right?
Yes.
So why did you leave Brunswick Records at the time?
Well, we left Brunswick because they were going through some legal issues.
Okay.
at the time. And so everything got kind of bogged down, and it was in our best interest to kind of walk away at the time.
And did Gus bring you to...
Gus brought us to Innovation.
Well, I was at Innovation. Carl had sent me over there.
Okay.
To work, you know, over there after I had left Brunswick. I had left Brunswick as well.
Okay.
And so I went to Innovation. Then.
So you were working as at promotions for Innovation,
yeah,
at the time. And so you cut this record, Your Mission, if you decide to accept it.
Yes.
Which is a nice 70s type of
that
song.
That was also the Funk Brothers on the rhythm tracks on that particular song.
So you actually went to Detroit to record
No,
it?
They just recorded the tracks in Detroit.
Okay.
The musical tracks in Detroit. And Sonny Sanders, as a matter of fact, a great arranger, he arranged it.
Yeah, the strings are nice on it, too.
He went up to Detroit, got the tracks done with the Funk Brothers, and he brought them back to Chicago, and we recorded the vocals here.
Okay, well, I'm going to play the record, and we could talk some more. I think this came out in 1974.
Yeah.
Good morning, baby. The picture of the man that you're looking at. The picture of a lonely man who found out too late that by losing you, he lost the best thing he's ever had. Your mission, if you decide to accept it, is to try his love just one more time for his heart will self-destruct.
Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just The Lost Generation with the last record they released from 1974, and that was Your Mission, if you decide to accept it, and that came out on the Innovation 2 label in Chicago. It was Carl Davis's label, but it's distributed by Warner Brothers.
Yes.
And that record, it must have gotten some radio play in Chicago, right?
Oh, yeah. It got played nationally.
Also, Rodney Jones was part of that label, too.
Okay.
Yeah, Rodney Jones was part of that label as well.
Yeah, and that label also had like a Chicago sound, too. It was like mid-70s type Chicago sound. So how long did the group stay together after that record came out?
Well, after that record came out, we kind of we did one more CD or one more album that was never released. I think it was a very good album. We did a lot of good material.
Well, so there's an unreleased Lost Generation album?
Unreleased Lost
was
Generation
it,
album.
Was it recorded for Innovation 2?
It was recorded for Innovation 2, I believe.
Innovation.
Do you know if the tapes are still out there?
Carl Davis probably. I think it is in the can somewhere.
And we have copies. Yeah, but I don't have them with me, but we have copies.
It's in the can.
That's amazing that you just... I can't believe it was an unreleased Lost Generation album.
Yeah, it was unreleased. And matter of fact, it was Laurel's last album with us. Matter of fact, he wrote this album, and he said, "Well, this is the last time I'm going to be in group." So we had much more diverse leads on it because he was kind of breaking away, and he was recording his own album with Gus on Zoo York Records.
Yeah, well, he was in Zoo York around '82, but he did that Mellow Mellow right on.
No, that was like 78, actually.
That when Mellow Mellow Right On was on AVI Records.
It was on AVI. AVI is 78, Mellow Mellow Right On Kick, because Laurel, myself, and my brother, who just passed away, Jeffrey Simon, who wrote a lot of songs for The Notations, last album on Kirk Time, he just recently passed away. Me, him, and Laurel, we wrote Laurel's first big hit single, Mellow Right On.
So that came out around 76.
That came out 78.
Oh, 78. Sorry. Yeah. So in between, you were like the group actually recorded an unreleased album, and you were still kind of performing, but you kind of drifted. We were breaking up at that time.
We were breaking up, and then
was it because Laurel wanted to go solo?
Because Laurel wanted to go solo.
Okay.
But then we were approached by Ralph Johnson, who was leaving the Impressions.
Okay.
At the time, and he approached me and Larry Brownlee to come sing with him in the new Impressions. But then there was some kind of legal thing where Fred and Sam of the original Impressions, they wanted to carry the name on, so we didn't pursue that. And so Curtis Mayfield, who produced us on Kurtime Records, we created the group Mystique around Ralph Johnson.
Okay. So, and at the same time, were you singing on your brother's stuff, or Mystique was before your brother did?
About the same time. We did all the background vocals on my brother's recordings, but we were also recording with Mystique.
Okay, so Mystique...
Because Laurel was a writer for Kurtime Records also. He
wrote a lot of the notations.
He wrote a lot of...
He wrote the Three the Hard Way soundtrack.
He did Three the Hard Way.
Yeah.
And another group...
He wrote the Natural Four.
He was doing a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, Curtis Mayfield, Laurel was just an equal songwriter. Is anybody...
Yeah, I mean, he wrote a lot of...
He's on the same caliber like Smokey Robinson, Curtis Mayfield. Laurel wrote for a bunch of artists, Johnny Mathis, a lot of artists. So.
And he still is. He has a lot of gorgeous songs that he... he's got a couple of, those two I fell in love with. The Man Who Loves a Woman and Behave Yourself. Those are gorgeous, gorgeous songs. And then he did another one,
He wrote a song a long time ago called Kids Taking Care of Kids.
Yeah.
And he wrote the song like in the 70s, and it's relevant today.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
Right.
So around that time, it was around 76, he kind of left, 75, 76.
Yeah.
And you and Larry went into Mystique.
We went to Mystique, yes.
Did the Deans ever do anything after that?
No. Well, when we came back afterwards, when we did the new Lost Generation, but that was later.
Okay, so Mystique was Ralph Johnson, Fred Simon,
Charles Fowler, and Larry Brownlee.
Who was Charles? Did you know Charles?
Charles Fowler was a childhood friend of Ralph's from Greenville, South Carolina.
So Ralph's not from Chicago originally?
No, he's from Greenville, South Carolina, and he brought Charles up.
So he moved to Chicago to be in the Impressions, pretty much?
Yes. We finally got myself together. Same thing it took.
Okay. And he was young. He was younger than you guys.
Yes.
And so the group, he just approached you guys and asked you to form this group?
Yes.
And do you sign to Curtown Records?
We signed to Curtown Records with Curtis Mayfield, and he executive produced our one album that we did with... on Curtown Records. He recruited a lot of big time producers. Bunny Sigler from Philly International was with Gamblin' Huff at the time.
Okay.
Richard Rome with Gamblin' Huff. Jerry Butler's Fountain Records. Gene McDaniels, who did 100 Pounds of Clay from L.A. He
was a big Atlantic producer.
Yeah, he brought him in. Yeah, he spent a lot of money on this on the album. We did our pictures at the old Playboy Mansion downtown on Michigan Avenue. Jim Latwig, who was taking all the Playboy bunnies, we got our pictures taken in the same studio. And
you had colorful uniforms too.
Very colorful. Yeah.
I think you had three national hits off of the album.
Well, we had one, What Would the World Be Like Without Music. That was Bunny Sigler originally wrote that one. And then we had a couple more. But then it was mostly, it kind of fizzled out after that.
Okay, well, let me play What Would the World Be Like Without Music, and then we can talk some more about...
Matter of fact, it's MFSB, the band that played on all the Philadelphia International songs that Gamblin' Huff wrote. They did the tracks for this.
That's actually, when I first heard this CD, that's what I fell in love with, this song.
Okay.
It's my favorite one off of it.
But you heard it back in the day, though, right?
He used to sing songs to me when we first started seeing each other, and you know, by the time I heard the CD, I knew all of the songs because I hear them all the time.
Okay.
I still know, I mean, some of the stuff that's not been released, I know it because I actually get a live performance of them singing them. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to play the record, What Would the World Be Without Music, and we can talk some more.
I need some.
Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Mystique with their biggest hit, What Would the World Be Without Music? And if you're just tuning in, Fred Simon of Mystique and The Lost Generation is up in here talking about his music. So that was your biggest hit, and then you had a few follow-up records, too.
Yeah, we had a few follow-up records, but they didn't chart well after that, so we kind of parted ways with...
So how long was the group together?
We were together about a couple of years.
And did you break up like late 70s sometime?
Late 70s, yeah, because I distinctly remember because I had to go get a real job.
Okay.
You know, where I'm at today, and I'm very proud because I've been at... I'm the assistant director of security at McCormick Place.
Okay.
And I've been there for 30 years, since 78.
Well, I mean, it's good you were able to establish a career, too, like not just a job.
But absolutely, yeah.
And I know your brother continued to do music. Like, I know he had a sort of nationally charting record, Love Massage.
Love Massage.
That came out around 82, I think.
Overdose of Love, also. He charted with three songs, Overdose of Love, Melody.
But that was those were earlier. Those were, like, on AVI records.
Yeah, those
around
were on
late
AVI.
70s.
I was working for AVI Records, too.
Okay.
And that's how we got the deal. I was there with the La Papa Moose.
Okay.
And with Captain Sky.
Okay.
And I think that was Liberace's label.
Liberace was
part of that.
One of the labels.
Yeah.
But they put out a lot of Chicago records and
a
lot of disco.
Captain Sky came out. And
But there were a ton of weird...
Davis Inport. Another group.
Yeah.
And Jesus Wayne was on the album.
Yeah, Jesus Wayne.
Yeah, Jesus was there. Well, I promoted all that. I was the promotion person for all of that.
Okay.
And then I got lucky and got Laurel over there, and then we bust Laurel's record.
Which was probably one of the biggest AVI records.
It was.
Next to the Le Pample Moose.
Next to Le Pample Moose. La Pample Moose.
Okay.
La Pample Moose, right.
So, did you stay, so you pretty much focused on your career after that?
Yeah, I was working at McCormick Place, and then an old friend of mine approached my wife, really, because I was out of the business. I didn't want to sing anymore. And he approached my wife to let's start a record label and let's do some things. So we sat down and pulled our money together, and we did this album called, CD called The New Lost Generation. We worked with one of the great producers in Chicago. His name is Mike Logan.
Okay.
Who's played with all of the great jazz musicians all over the country. Will Downing.
Chris Bode.
Chris, yeah, all those guys.
So when did you form The New Lost Generation? Around what year?
1996.
Okay. And the CD that I have here is from 2003. Did you record anything before then?
We recorded the single. Thinking About You, and then subsequently we brought this CD out afterwards. So the single came out in about 2000.
And you said it was your wife's idea to reform the group?
Well, they approached me. It was my wife and a friend of mine, the lead singer, matter of fact, on this particular CD, Charles Jackson. He approached my wife to soften me up to so we can start doing this thing again. And we did it, and this is one of the biggest stepper songs in the Chicago area.
And who were the members of the New Lost Generation?
It was Audra Rushing, Diana Simon, Charles Jackson, and myself.
Okay, and you released this record, Thinking About You, around 2000.
Around 2000, yeah.
And it got huge club play in Chicago.
Club and radio airplay. Sam Chapman was on the radio at the time, and Herb Kent, they helped us really break the song.
Okay, and so I'm going to play the record, and we can talk some more. So this is The New Lost Generation with Thinking About You.
Keeps you on my mind. It's that special thing about you, babe, that really, really blows my mind. You seem to be unapproachable because of your class and style. From the graceful way you walk, ooh-wee, to the sexy way you smile, I want to be the first to say, yeah, I want to do to you, babe.
Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just part of the song Thinking About You by the new Lost Generation, which came around 2000.
Yeah.
And you guys actually released a CD on this finally around 2003.
Yeah.
And is the CD available? People can get it somewhere?
Yes, the site is...
The website is www.nlg396.com.
Okay.
396 for March of 1996.
Which is when you guys formed?
Yes.
Okay. Well, at least it's documented. You'll never forget that.
I was looking for a website address, and I happened to look over at the posters when we did the Dalton Expo, and was looking for a name or an address, a website address, and I happened to look over and... March 96 was there, and that's how I came up with 396.
Okay, and you guys do a lot of local performances, is that right?
Well, we did, but we haven't performed in a while. We're in the studio concentrating on this new CD right now. But we did all the stepper sets with Pete Fraser, the Majestic Gents, Phil Johnson, Leisure Entertainment, a lot of New Year's Eve sets.
So you do like a lot of stepper sets?
A lot of stepper sets, yeah.
I know,
and festivals, Maywood Fest.
Yeah, we opened up Maywood Fest. We opened up for the Isleys at the Airy Crown when...
The
a few years ago, and Kenny Lattimore.
Kenny Lattimore.
When was that?
That was early 2000, 2001.
Okay, and I saw you guys at the Taste of Chicago maybe six years ago or something.
Yeah, we did the Taste, yeah.
And I saw you guys, you actually do the slide slick in the Wicked also now.
Yes, yes.
But you do, I saw you do the delay effect manually.
Yeah. We had to figure that out early on in our careers, how are we going to do that? And when we did it live, the audiences just went crazy because they didn't know how we were going to pull that off. But okay. We were able to, yeah.
And you said you like the This Is the Lost Generation. We actually re-recorded it as This Is the New Lost Generation on our...
Right, basically.
And that's on the CD that we just talked about.
Yeah, it's on the latest CD.
So if people want to hear the new version,
they can go to the website. Yeah.
And so what I'm going to play now is, it's a rough mix, I guess, of some of the new material you recorded.
Yes.
And this is a version of the Barbara Eklund song, Love Makes a Woman.
Yes.
So let me play it, and then we can talk a little bit more.
Hey, ladies.
Hey, ladies.
You know, we sit around talking about we want money, cars, big, fine, fancy houses, and this and that. Well, none of that really matters if you don't have love, because, you know, true love is what really makes a woman. Sweetheart, I know I should have been learning, but my pockets were full of money, yes they were, and I had someone, yes I did, to call my honey, but it's
Okay, that was just the new Lost Generation with the song, which they haven't even released yet. It's a version of the Barbara Acklin record Love Makes a Woman, and it was definitely a nice sort of remake of it. And I liked how there was also it was real instruments on it too, like there was saxophone and guitar.
Yeah.
So when are you planning to release new material?
Well, right now we're still working on some things. We have to line up our schedules with our producer Mike Logan.
Okay.
And he's out of town constantly touring. He's currently touring with Tyler Perry, one of Tyler Perry's plays now.
Does he do sound for the play?
He does the keyboard. He's the keyboard player in the band.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I didn't know Tyler Perry still did plays, given he's so big now.
Oh, yeah. He still does plays, yeah.
So that record, so when do you expect something to come out?
Shortly. Right now we're looking for a deal.
Okay.
We always are. But if none is forthcoming, then we'll release it on our own label.
Okay.
This is actually called The Lost Generation and Friends, because the original lead singer with the new Lost Generation, Charles Jackson, he left the group.
Okay.
We had some creative differences. But this is Lost Generation and Friends, so we went back and we got some of our friends to sing along on some of the songs. So that particular song that just played was my wife Diana doing the lead vocals on that. We did a remake of People Make the World Go Round with myself and Diana. We also have a young man named
Byron Woods.
He's doing a remake of Otis LaVille's song.
Mike Jones.
Got Mike Jones.
Isn't Mike Jones with Essence?
No. This is Mike. Yeah, Mike
yeah,
Jones.
Yeah, he sings with the Essence. I know the Southern
right,
Mike
right,
Jones.
Right,
guy.
Mike Jones. Yeah.
But yeah, they said they were doing a CD with him.
Yeah, Mike. Yeah. He's one of those guys.
Teresa Davis.
Oh, so she's on your two
she's
records.
On, she's on with the Emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
She's with the Emotions, so she's on a few of the tracks here. So we went and got some of our friends and brought them in, and it's coming out pretty well.
Yeah, it sounds nice. I'll be looking forward to it, and the audience should look out for it when it comes out.
I'm going
to
be their distributor.
Okay, well, people should definitely look out for it when it comes out.
Distribution. That's what it's
going to
be.
So, first of all, I want to say thanks so much for coming down, and hopefully in the last few minutes we'll play some more of the material. So, first of all, it was an interesting interview, and I appreciate everyone coming down to tell their story.
And we want to thank you, too, because what you're doing here, recognizing Chicago artists that didn't really blow up real big, or some that did, I went to your site when you originally called me, and I just listened to I got into listening to the interviews, and I really got carried away. I mean, I stayed up to like 4 or 5 in the morning.
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Listening to interviews, because it was so interesting, and people, they should tune into your show and get some very interesting stuff about Chicago artists.
Yeah, thanks so much. I mean, there's so many local stories, and you know, very few people were in the right place at the right time to make it really big, but a lot of people make great music, so I appreciate you guys making excellent music too. So I'm just trying to keep the music alive.
Absolutely. We appreciate you, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being like TJ
Levinsky. So this, I'm going to play some more of the new Lost Generation records, but I wanted to get in right at the end the track Pretty Little Angel Eyes. So this last record is the Lost Generation with Pretty Little Angel Eyes.
I'm and didn't get my trash today.
Come on, step along with the loss.